Hey, gang, welcome to a very sort of historic We Watch Stuff number 100. And I know this is supposed to be like a big deal because it's number 100, but if you think about it, there's 52 weeks in the year. So we haven't even done 2 years worth of shows yet.
That's Hello, my big everybody. Reveal. This is our 100th episode, and I'm someone is much more excited about it than the other person.
I'll be excited for 104.
Yes. So congratulations on the 100 episode, because I remember when we first started this thinking we might do this for like a month and then get tired of each other. And now here we go, 100 episodes in. So salute.
And like usual, we don't have much planned. We're just going to talk outside of the few topics we got. So we'll fill an hour and a half like usual. All right, so we'll start with wrestling because that's what everyone's favorite thing is. I was talking to Shade off air about this, and I know you're not a huge fan of the guy, but Kevin Owens.
It's not that I'm not a huge fan. Like, I'm a fan, but I'm not that whole. He's my favorite. You know what's funny? I admire and appreciate his journey, and I like him because he's one of the few quote unquote heels that I actually dislike the correct way.
Okay. Perfect. Because I liked him because he was like a smarmy dick. But he was still had, like, as I was telling Kevin, that he had like a kind of a cool factor to him still. Well, since coming to SmackDown, he is very good at his job because I just don't like him anymore. I think it was his first, first night that when he got moved over to SmackDown. He had an interview segment on Talking Smack afterwards. And, you know, Talking Smack usually is a lot looser show. I mean, that's where the Usos, like, broke out of their shell, was on that show. Mm-hmm. Alexa Bliss, after she won the title, started crying. And she's a heel, so it's like, all right, it kind of blurred the lines. But Kevin Owens has ramped, I'm guessing, his character up big time. He was just a douche, like a humorless douchebag to Renee and Daniel Bryan. And then even tonight, or I'm sorry, not tonight, last night's show, Shane McMahon was on, and he was just a total douche to Shane. And I'm going to give Shane his props for like his acting, but it looked like he was legitimately bothered with Kevin Owens. Because it didn't seem like there was any like wink wink, like, you know, we're just having fun mm-hmm. here. It was just straight up douchebaggery, and I'm like, I don't like this guy. And they had AJ Styles on earlier, and he's supposed to be like, he's just a cocky guy, but you can get behind him. Where Kevin Owens came out and he was just a terrible person.
Yeah, Kevin Owens has the gift of being extremely unlikable. But not in the way like you want to turn off the TV, like in the fact where you want him to see somebody beat his ass. And since he's come since he's been in WWE, especially when he was on Raw, he just always rubbed me the wrong way. But like in our old school wrestling way, because he's just a dickhead and he goes out his way to be he's not one of those cool heels. He's just unlikable. And he goes out in his way. Like, he does enough stuff to see why people care about him, and he's credible in the ring, and that helps. But he's an asshole.
Yeah.
And he reinforces how much he's an asshole. And then he does enough stuff during matches to make you not like him, like rolling out the ring, stalling, stuff like that. Like, you just want to see somebody just pulverize him. So putting him on SmackDown, having him talk his Smack, where he can just reinforce how much of a And it's the whole funny thing that helps. That French-Canadian thing is easy to hate. I don't know if that's an American thing, but it's something like it's different from the Canadians that are from like Toronto and Calgary, and then the ones that are like from Montreal, like seeing this have a certain level of arrogance. Because Maurice is the same way.
Yes.
And it kind of fits in. It's like that whole, I'm better than you, and I don't mind telling you nonsense. And it's just funny when you see this big, fat guy that can fight. And it's just like all those things just coalesce and like, yeah, I want somebody to beat him up whenever I see him on my TV.
And the bad thing is he's going against AJ Styles, who doesn't say he's going to beat anybody up. He's just going to beat them. So it's like, even if AJ Styles wins, takes the U.S. title going forward, whatever, I don't know if it'll have the proper or the significant, like, cathartic moment where, like, haha, you got it. You just, like you said, you want someone to beat the hell out of him. Yeah. So, and there's guys on SmackDown, like a Luke Harper, Kevin Owens, who would be fantastic.
Yeah. But, you know what's funny? Just thinking about when Kevin Owens won the title and people chanted, "You deserved it." It's just funny thinking about that because technically he kind of did based on his journey, but that's the last person you would think about being sympathetic toward because it's like the character doesn't match the man behind it, because the man behind it is like, you know, I'm doing this for my kids. I was in the indies, and for the longest, it's like somebody with that body type and looking like that would never make it. And he became Triple H's guy. But it's just weird where you know all that backstory that helps toward that, but then you see how he acts, and it's like, cold, pardon my lane, but fuck him. Like, somehow beat him up. And it's funny where he makes AJ Styles seem sympathetic, and AJ Styles doesn't do anything but be cocky. He's like, AJ Styles like that cocky athlete. Like, you know, he walks around like he's the cat's ass, but you know why he's walking around that way, because he's kind of the cat ass. Yeah. Kevin Owens is like that guy that, like, kicked your mailbox over.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then when the police get there, they can't prove it, but he's standing right there, just mm-hmm. bragging. So yeah, but it's kind of nice to have a heel like that, because, you know, as much as I love the guy, Braun Strowman's supposed to be the heel in the Strowman Reigns feud, and I mean, you know, as a fan, and I was explaining this to Kevin when that match at Payback, when Roman Reigns kicked out of the Power Slam the first time. I just threw my arms up like, come on. Only because I wanted Strowman to win. I didn't want Reigns to win. It's like a pure fan perspective. And I love that Strowman just picked him up, slammed him again, and that was it. That was wonderful. But on the way out, I mean, Roman got his ass handed to him. And the only reason it drew this memory out was when he said, "You deserved it."
Yeah.
Roman's limping out of the arena, and those savage fans are chanting, "You deserved it."
Yeah, we talked about that on Stunt Granny, about how Braun Strowman was basically being the monster, the bully, and the crowd was cheering him, like, "Come conquer us, we love you." Like, and that's kind of like how that changed the dynamic. And we were talked about how it's like, it's not a lot of real natural baby faces, and it's not really a lot of natural heels that you want to boo. Like, on SmackDown, it's basically Kevin Owens and Baron Corbin, and to a certain extent, Dolph Ziggler. But, like, Dolph Ziggler's kind of like that whatever thing. So it helps that Kevin Owens is there to reinforce that you have that old school heel that you can dislike on SmackDown, because he had, and the fact that he has credibility. It's just weird seeing that, because you don't see that too much these days. Most of the heels, like, they're so cool and entertaining where even when they try to be heelish, you end up cheering them. And him, he does not try to be cheered at all. Tries not to be friendly one bit. He goes out his way to just irk people. As someone is muted.
That's weird.
Yeah, did you mute yourself again?
Yeah, but I don't know how. I'm not even near the button.
That's what I figured, because I stopped talking. And I was like, yeah, someone...
I was talking. well, I mean, I'll repeat myself, but it's... When Owens and Jericho were together, they got booed sort of at first. And then, you know, they started having, like, the fans cheer, you know, with the whole friendship thing. And then, you know... Maybe it was the beloved Chris Jericho that did it, you know, because after a while, people really got into Jericho. I mean, his goofy, stupid jacket, the scarves, I don't know how it would be, actually. Anyways.
Yeah, like, basically, Kevin Owens was playing a straight man to Jericho being ridiculous, and people basically cheered Jericho.
Mm-hmm.
And it was kind of messing it up where... they're supposed to be these two, like, top heels on Raw, but Jericho's so entertaining... it's kind of like, it was almost like the enhanced version, like the whole Sheamus Cesaro thing where you're booing one guy and cheering the other guy, and it's kind of like messing up the heel more than the face. But at least Cesaro was trying to be a face. Jericho wasn't a face in that. The crowd just made him that way because he was so entertaining doing that. And having them break up basically reinforced people disliking Owens even more because you didn't want to see the breakup. And then seeing a breakup was kind of like, yeah, you're going to root for Chris Jericho and all that.
Yeah, and especially last night, just decimating him with a chair afterwards. Jericho hasn't hidden the fact that he's older now, but, I mean, that's part of it too. And I just... There was something else. Oh, when you mentioned Cesaro, it's funny how this works because Jericho kind of has to be given credit for Owens's, you know, reaction now. The Hardys made Cesaro a heel.
Yes.
That's crazy to me. Like, we legit about booing Cesaro, of all people.
Yeah, we talked about that too. And the thing I loved most about that whole program was the promo they cut Monday with Cesaro and Sheamus, because they were absolutely right.
I missed their promo. Like,
no, so. Basically Sheamus came out there and he was like, you know, you guys know I never liked you. Cesaro did, and you had the Cesaro section. He tried to convince me, like, you know, if we fight and do our jobs, the crowd will get behind us. The crowd start getting behind us and everything. We're going to get our titles back at WrestleMania. And then all of a sudden the Hardy Boys just walks in unannounced out of nowhere, steals the belt, and now the crowd's getting behind them because it's like a nostalgia act. Like, oh, whoop-de-doo, you remember nostalgia. And like, basically, like the fans are busy stuck in the past and worry about the future, and they're not paying attention to the present. And this whole thing is like, you know, we're here doing it, and you forgot all about us because some new fresh toy came in that's just going to be around. You remember the good old days. And I was like, they told no lies.
Wow.
That's basically what Sheamus and Cesaro says. Kind of like, we're trying to do, like, I try to convince Sheamus that we're doing the right thing. And as soon as we get some traction, the Hardy Boys just come and steal the spotlight on some, we remember them when we were kids stuff.
Oh, that was Cesaro saying that?
Sheamus started it, oh, okay. and Cesaro finished it.
Well, damn it. I didn't bother to go back and watch the segment. I'm like, you know, as I've discovered with this new TV setup I have, WWE puts almost the entire Raw episode on YouTube. You just have to, like, but they do it in sections. And yeah, they'll cut out a couple seconds here and there. You can watch almost the entire episode of Raw and be caught up on storylines and all that in maybe 35 minutes.
Yeah.
Which, like, I wonder if that goes to their ratings going down. So.
Yeah. I know I was watching the USA app, and I was basically watching it live. I didn't even realize, like, I knew they had a USA app. I didn't realize how effective it was. It was basically like having my cable box on my phone.
Where, oh, I didn't realize that you could watch USA live.
Yeah, like, I have a cable subscription, so you sign in the app, and you have subscriptions. Like, you can watch on-demand shows. Like, do you want to watch live? I'm like, yeah. And you're watching it live, including the commercials and everything. I'm like,
oh, wow, okay.
I don't have an excuse to ever miss an episode of Raw or SmackDown again. Basically, I could watch that work if I want. And which helps me when I work the evening shift. So, no, that promo definitely stood out because I was thinking the same thing.
But you wouldn't do something like that and watch TV at work. Let's just make sure everyone understands that.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Of course. I'm busy saving lives.
Yes.
So, as I was saying, yeah, so it was funny with that dynamic there because we talked about that. It's kind of like the Hardys are in a weird spot where everyone knows why they're back because of all that TNA stuff. They're playing into it a little bit. I know they made the deal where they can do it now whenever they want to. You know it's coming, but they're still doing this old school, like, you know, where the Hardys and yada, yada, yada. And it's like, that's nice in theory, but watching it in practice, like, it's like the Rock and Roll Express. Like, they're not the Hardy Boys from 1999 and 2000. This is 2017. Like, these guys, they didn't get over based on their ring work. That whole broken stuff. It was like they got over based on their gimmick and the promos they cut. And the fans know, and everybody knows, and every now and then Matt Hardy drops things here and there, and he still plays into it at Twitter. So it's kind of like people just waiting for that shoe to drop at this point.
And I'm wondering if a loss to Sheamus and Cesaro or some sort of beatdown is going to do it. I don't know. Just seems
I figure that's where it's going, because out of all the tag teams that's on there on Raw now, because then like the Revival is hurt, Sheamus and Cesaro are like the most credible. And it's easy to, like, Cesaro was a heel for a while before he became face. It's easy to hate Sheamus. Like, Sheamus is best being a bully dickhead himself. Mm-hmm. So that definitely works. And they have a nice chemistry between those two, because it's like they can bully the Hardy Boys.
Yes.
Like, because Sheamus is a big dude, and Cesaro is just physically imposing himself. Like, he's not big, but you look at him as no, like, he's a damn mutant. Like, somehow Cam posted that picture, like that leg drop he dropped, where he's jumping from the mat and his entire body is over the top rope off a vertical jump. And I'm like, they talk about it all the time, but it's still, I don't think they talk about enough, like, how amazing an athlete Cesaro is.
That was kind of what got him over. That got the crowd to take notice. I think people, well, one, people were just sick of him not getting pushed. And then two, his athleticism, I mean, he got over when he started doing the Cesaro swing. People were impressed.
Yeah, that and like the superplex where he does it the hard way, where he had like no leverage, just muscle people over, like drop kicking people when they're on the top rope and he's on the apron. Like,
yes.
And they would point it out, and it's like, Cesaro's a kind of like a, he's not a small guy, and he's doing cruiserweight stuff. And it's just like, wow. And you just see him as like kind of like an old school, he's got like old school strength. And like it's funny where he looks like an old school wrestler, like body type and everything like that. But you see him in 2017, and it's like, that don't seem possible.
Yeah. It's funny, I sent you a picture when we were talking about like size and all that sort of people. Have you seen this picture?
I'm about to look now and see.
It's from the overseas trip from, I guess Titus took it today.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I see it. I saw that earlier.
Okay, so he had to take it down, obviously, a dumbass. Because, you know, Strowman supposedly has a torn rotator cuff and Roman Reigns is in a hospital bed in some undisclosed area.
Uh-huh.
Well,
yeah, I saw a picture with them together, like separately somewhere else, and people were making jokes about that too, and I was just laughing.
Can you look at the size and look at the size of Strowman? Roman Reigns and Titus O'Neil are not small people.
No, they're not.
And they look kind of like average dudes.
Yes, and we
I'll
also talked about that
on the website or in our Facebook page, everybody, so you can see what we're talking about, but.
Yeah, we also talked about that, saying like the thing that stands out about Braun Strowman is people his, like, one, he's huge, like not necessarily tall, but he's big. He's a big man, and he moves so damn fast. It's like a horror movie.
Mm-hmm.
And we were saying, like, for his body type, he's probably the best athlete that's been in like wrestling, American wrestling, since like Vader in his prime.
Oh wow, that's lofty praise, man.
I mean, just
wow.
Think about it,
yeah.
Like. Dave, you had big, strong guys. Like, Mark Henry was big and strong, but he didn't move fast. Like, Big Show was agile, but he wasn't, like, fast. Like, and he's big, and Braun Strowman was bigger. Like, Brock Lesnar is a big guy that moves fast, too. Braun Strowman probably got him by, what, 50, 60 pounds?
Yeah.
At least? It's kind of like, yeah. So, as far as, like, somebody that size with that strength that can move that quickly, it's not. They don't normally make human beings like that. Like, he's one of those type of guys, like, he'd run the combine in, like, 5 seconds, and you're wondering, like, how the hell the man inside the refrigerator can outrun you?
Yeah.
Like, it's like the Nature Channel where they talk about how, like, you know, you see a rhino and hippopotamus, and you don't think that. They can run you down and kill you, and you wouldn't think about seeing animals that size can run faster than the human. That's how Braun Strowman comes off. Like, he doesn't look normal either.
Well, it's funny, in this picture, I forgot to describe it, sorry, gang. It's from left to right is Strowman, Heath Slater, Matt Hardy, Curtis Axel, Roman Reigns, and Titus O'Neil. And if you're ever wondering why Curtis Axel doesn't get a push or get used, not even a push, even get used that much, this picture is going to tell you everything you need to know. there is a, I know that like body types are kind of gone for the most part, but you've got to look different, and poor Kurt just looks kind of plain.
Yes.
You're like, who's the, oh, is that their guide? Oh, that was nice. They got a tap out shirt.
So. And it's funny where he's not a small guy either. And he's like, he looked fine normally, but it's just, he looks fine and he wrestles fine. And that's not enough. I mean, that's something that's kind of like WWE has right now probably has the best in-ring talent as far as like put on a wrestling match that they've ever had. And it gets to the point where if you aren't special in the ring and you aren't a special talker, don't have something to stand out, you won't get noticed or you just going to get ignored. Like Enzo being bad is noticeable because like that shit might have fly back in the Attitude Era. Like that ain't flying now. Mm. And Curtis Axel being plain is like, why would I want to watch him?
And the other thing, he doesn't have, like, they've tried different personalities with him, and it's not working, but just...
Ted DiBiase syndrome.
What was that?
Ted DiBiase Jr. syndrome.
Yeah. Oh, oof. You know what's funny? I have often forgotten he was actually in WWE, because he was there and then just left. And good for him. He wanted to leave, so good. He went off to do whatever he wanted to do.
Yeah,
but he made no impression. Well, he was in one of the Marine movies, wasn't he?
He was in the second Marine movie. He was in the Faction with Cody Rhodes and Randy Orton.
Yeah,
and he somehow made Maurice seem boring. Like they put Maurice with him, and it made them both worse. And I'm like, how does that happen? Like him and David Hart Smith is. At least David Hart Smith went to Japan and got better. But it's kind of like that whole, it's tough to be the son of a star.
Oh,
like, The sure. Rock. Yeah, like, The Rock and Randy Orton made it a lot easier than look at me because there's a lot more people that flame out than made it. Like, look how long it took Dustin Rhodes, like, Goldust to, like, make it. And you think of, like, the David San Martinos and the Sean Stasiaks and Scott Puskey and Bruno's son, and even like Ricky Steamboat's son. Like, he was one of those first guys. People talked about, like, one day he's going to come up and he's going to make it, and he never did, got hurt, and he retired. Like, yeah, it's a lot more washouts than there are people that made it. And even with women, like, you know, Lacey Von Erich. Where's she at?
You know what? I know where you're going with that one, but good.
Yeah.
I mean,
like, basically, it's like, yeah, like, we both know how that led, and it's kind of like, is wrestling is tough, and it's a shame, like, Curtis Axel in a normal circumstance will be fine, but unfortunately, he's not in a normal circumstance, and you see that picture where you stand next to Matt Hardy, like, Matt Hardy has a normal body type, but he has his personality to get over.
Yeah.
Titus O'Neil and Roman Reigns are who they are, and then you see Braun Strowman, it's like, yeah, I'm going to notice Braun first.
So of course I didn't listen to the show, so I don't want to ask you to repeat yourself, but did you talk about, what's it, not Apollo Creed, Apollo Crews and Titus O'Neil?
We talked about Apollo Crews, but it was more, not in the context with Titus O'Neil, more in the context where, and it's something that we both noticed, especially on the men's side. You remember back in like the late 90s and 2000, they talking about like the young up-and-coming stars, like The Rock was the youngest, the yada, 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 and like Randy Orton and Brock Lesnar. You notice how that's gone now where they don't have guys in like their early mid-20s?
No. Yeah, I mean, like they the youngest, don't.
Yeah, like the youngest guys are Apollo Crews, Kalisto, and Bray Wyatt. And like Apollo Crews and Bray Wyatt are like 29 or 30. Like everybody else are like 30s to mid-30s. Least everybody,
unless that's just, I mean, well, one that maybe go to them for not developing talent. I mean, I don't know, but then also a lot of the indie guys got, you know, they're starting to make a good living where they don't have to go anymore. So yeah, but no, I know what you're talking about. I mean, it's funny because the only reason I brought it up was I'm actually getting a kick out of the Titus O'Neil Apollo Crews thing, and I don't know why. It's just kind of funny. It's almost finally given Apollo Crews a little bit of a personality. with Titus O'Neil trying to run in on his, you know, run in on his success, it just kind of cracked me up.
You know what it reminds me of? And we were talking about it last week's show, LeVar Ball and Lonzo Ball.
Yeah.
And it's just funny. It's kind of like you just see Titus O'Neil just glomming on Apollo Crews, and Apollo Crews looking at him like, get away from me. Like, he's got that look. It's like he's playing along, but he really doesn't want to, but he doesn't know how to get out the situation. And it's funny where Apollo Crews has all the talent in the world. It's just, I think it's the personality thing. Like, it's the same thing they ran in thing like with Big E, where they don't let, he looks one way, but he's not the way he looks. And like the same thing, like Big E had that problem where Big E looks like a monster, so they try to book him like a monster, not realizing like Big E's a goofball.
I saw he's been marrying people.
Yes, like, he's ordained. He's like,
I got married way too young. That it all right. One, the wife, I don't think she would have gone for that. You understand how cool that would have been?
Yeah.
I mean, it was my second, so I was like, hey, anything goes. Whatever you want to do. I've been through this rigmarole already.
Yeah, just imagine the story you told, like, yeah, we got married by Big E.
Especially because I would have had him do his entrance. You know.
Yeah, Elise was not going to let that.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God, that would have been so sweet. I'm all giddy now, like, can you renew your vows after 3 years? Is that allowed? Well, I guess they'll be back by then, but I just thought that was cool. But no, I mentioned that because of, yeah, he's a goofball. But I don't know much about Apollo Crews to whether he's – like, they had that thing on Talking Smack, and he was talking about his father and this, and I'm like, oh, you seem like a pretty decent dude, actually. Okay. And then I don't know if he was on anymore. Oh, he got his ass beat by Dolph Ziggler.
Yeah.
Which, like, is ridiculous.
The main thing you know about him is that he's super athletic, and he's best friends with Akira Tozawa. Which is weird as hell when you think about it on one way, but then you realize this wrestling is kind of like friends are friends, and sometimes people you wouldn't expect being friends are friends. But it's kind of like, yeah, that's it. And it's kind of like talking about how athletic he is and him doing moonsaults are fine, but that gets old after a while. It's like, okay, he's athletic, and like, this is not, we're not in the Olympics. Like,
I mean, so is Kevin Owens.
Yeah, like everyone, like, it's, he's athletic in a way where it stands out, but he's not so athletic where that's all you, like, you just can't get away with being athletic. Like, Shelton Benjamin could do that because he was also a great wrestler. And then it was kind of like nobody was like on his level.
Yeah.
Like, it's not anybody that's doing what Apollo Crews can do, but they got enough great athletes there where him being a great athlete isn't enough. Yeah, so they got to, like, work on this. And it's kind of like, you know, it's that whole thing. They need to stop having these guys. He just coming out smiling and just grinning and stuff. And they need to cut that out.
Yes.
Like, even Booker T points a lot. Like, I don't like these guys just coming out smiling, happy to be here. I like people being mean, trying to get paid, beating people up. When you got your commentator saying that, like, Booker T's not a heel commentator either. It's like, you got your commentator saying that. That's a problem.
The other thing, they've kind of gotten away from it. But it, like, certain wrestlers, of course, they would always say, well, they're just out there to have a good time. And it's like, that's not why you're out here. And I know all the characters can't be the same, but god damn, that's I don't remember the specific wrestlers, but I know you've heard it too. It's always like, they're out here just having fun. It's like, no,
Rich Swann is the first person to think of. Like, he's here dancing, having fun, entertaining. It's like, usually, like, this. Because they get labeled as kiddie wrestlers. Whenever they
yeah,
be like
a, that's...
And that's a hard tag. And it's kind of like, unless you're like Rey Mysterio, that's a hard tag to shake and be taken seriously. Like, if it's like, I'm for the kid, like Hornswoggle can be for the kids. Don't be no grown up like, I'm just here having a good time doing my dance. And I just want to put smiles on faces and go to happy places. And like, you got a whole bunch of ornery 40 and 50 year olds watching your show, and they are not here for that. It's like, Raw is that funny thing, and we talked about, like, WWE is the funny thing where the crowd is either kids, like early to like young teens, or old people. Like, it's, you don't see the whole, like, back when we watched Attitude Era, like, that college crowd, like,
oh, yeah,
17 to, like, early 30s, they all, they didn't go, they grew up. They're us now. Like, we're all in, like, our 30s and 40s and 50s. Like, when I go to the crowd, it's either people that's, like, in my age range, people older than me, or people a lot younger. Like, I can't remember the last time I see, like, people in, like, their late teens, early 20s.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Even at WrestleMania, that, you didn't see too much of that.
Yeah, and that's that demographic that people always go at, like, you know, the whole 17 to 31, and it's like, yeah, people watch WWE, but it's like, it's the wrong demographic for what people, like, get commercial, like, money for. It's like, they want to get the young people. It's like, not the super young. They basically get the super young and the super old people.
Yeah. And that, well, it was funny, because wasn't it the ratings, like, the demographic breakdown, it was about a year ago that they had more, like, 50 and over viewers than they did 18 and under or something like that. It was, and that was pretty eye-opening to where they're trying to get the kids in, but there's actually more viewers. But also, and that's like I was saying earlier, teenagers and even kids. I mean, my friends have grandkids, and I'm not that old, but, you know. And then I've got nephews, and my brother, like, he says they don't watch Raw. They watch all the highlights on YouTube because they're eight and six now. And they know how to use tablets. They know how to use laptops, all that stuff. So they go to YouTube, watch WWE programming.
Yeah. Like, it's real. It's a very intriguing phenomenon that's coming on. And I think it's how it looks at wrestling, where you're having a generation now that they like – they watch what we watch, but they watch it differently. Like, if they have no problem using technology. Like, they'll watch on the tablet, watch on the phone. The network is fine. They'll stream stuff. And that's in conflict with – still a lot of people that's like, I ain't cutting the cord. Like, my wife is – I know I spend a lot of money on my cable bill. There's no way in the world I'm cutting my – like, when my wife wants to turn on TV, she wants to turn on TV and have the channel on there, and it's working. Like, she's old-fashioned that way. Like, I don't want to worry about internet lag or signing in with a password. Like, she ain't trying to do all that. She's paying for the convenience. Like, I'm going to turn the channel on, and it goes this channel. And it's still a lot of people like that. I mean, it's probably dwindling, but not – it's dwindling slow and steadily, but it's still, like, a lot of – and I'm just think about the average Raw fan. They might have the network at most, but they are not going on YouTube. They are not messing around with their tablet. Like, imagine you in your 50s and 60s messing around with a tablet trying to put in a WWE subscription. Like, yeah. you might be too damn blind to see, like, the sign and things. Like, you want to turn on the channel and watch. And it's a lot of people that's like, think about it. If you were watching the 70s and 80s as a kid, you're in your 30s or 40s or, like, 50s now. So it's basically like those fans stay fans and their children might be fans. But they're not making new young fans.
And if they are, it's not at the clip they want, and they're not turning out for the live shows. I would be curious to know, like, their actual social... Does YouTube count as social media?
Yes.
Okay. I would be curious to know what those numbers really are, which we'll never get. But
yeah. But anyways, I know they have a... Yeah, I know to wrap it up. Like, they have a social media impact. I know people used to make fun of them saying how they used to brag about that and everything like that. They were kind of ahead of the curve with that. Like, the network working as well as it works is a minor miracle, because it could have easily fell on its face. Mm-hmm. And I mean, like, it gained subscriptions. Like, it's been gaining subscriptions slowly and steadily, even with the whole we give away a month, we give away 3 months. It's like, eventually, you know, people just keep it. Like, it's like, it's $10 a month. They don't feel like canceling. Like, it might be some people that switch around from email to email, but only, like, cheap-ass nerds are doing that, and there's only so many of them. Like, most people's like, you know what, it's $10, whatever, mm-hmm. and just keep it. And they might use it, like, just for the pay-per-view or watch Ride Along, which is hilarious. Like, it's normally one of its most popular shows on network is Ride Along, which is, I remember thinking about that when Eric was talking about that earlier, and it is, like, when they have the breakdowns, it's usually number one or two. So it's kind of like, yeah, I keep it. I use it when I want to use it, and it's there. And
That's the same thing with Netflix.
Yeah, it's basically like Netflix. Like, who would have thought that's a thing? And I know the whole brouhaha is like, oh, it's nothing that you can't get on YouTube and Dailymotion. I'm like, you'd be surprised how many matches before Network was saying that were not on YouTube or Dailymotion that did not exist. Or if it was on there, it had scratched up audio or like it was filmed in somebody's basement while it was raining. It's like, this is convenient. Like, I can put in a name. I can hunt down almost any match I want to see. And it's there. And it's there looking nice on my big screen TV. Not something that's on some janky feed that's playing at half speed. Or they record it from their TV. So you got to look at it backwards to avoid copyright laws.
Yeah. Which is the weirdest thing. It's like, it's the same thing. It's just backwards. And they haven't come up with the technology to figure it out to get it yanked. Like, that's just bizarre to me. But anyways, I was going to bring up one other wrestling thing. I can save it for when we get back because I got to see where it goes first before I make a final judgment. We mentioned Netflix today. Yes, as we recorded the show, Netflix, Marvel TV released the first Defenders preview, trailer, whatever they're supposed to be called nowadays. What was your takeaway, man? I mean, I purposely didn't say too much about it.
Yeah, the first thing I noticed is how much better Iron Fist looked. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it was a combination of the haircut or he was in better shape or just him being around everybody else. The stuff that bothered me in his show by himself actually endeared him to me a little bit on the trailer, you know, you see a lot. Could you just realize how ridiculous he comes off? Like, that whole thing is like, I'm the immortal Iron Fist, and Luke Cage is like, the what? Like, mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's the perfect response. It's like, if you see some guy with a glowing hand, and you ask him who he is, and he says he's the immortal Iron Fist, and he looks like that. Yeah, you're going to be looking like, what is he on? And it was just that whole... And I don't know what got me more excited, those two together or Jessica Jones and Daredevil together, which weirdly is kind of like, because I think it's that whole thing, like, you've been waiting for all of them to be around, and they always kind of tease it, like, I know a lawyer, or I know this guy, I know something. And this, seeing them together finally, I think it's kind of like, you see what they build up to, and it just felt nice, like, you know, small, like TV Avengers, where you had like 3 or 4 years to build this whole universe up. So by the time the Avengers came and you had the scene where they all get together in a circle, it's like, it's a reason they always show that scene in the commercial, because it's like the money shot that works. And like seeing them together and like seeing how they built this small scale universe and just seeing it all coalesce, but not even just them, but all the side characters, it's like, I can't wait.
I was pretty happy with it. I agree with you on the Iron Fist stuff. I think you said what the wonders of a haircut, mm-hmm. or shave, whatever. I was like, yeah, it does look like he's in better shape, which, my God, it's almost as if they planned ahead for this one. Which
yeah,
boy, that would have helped.
Yeah, so
they're gonna have to explain though, and it's funny because I'm on IMDb and everybody's only in the series for 8 episodes.
Yeah, it's a short series. Hmm. And it's funny where you would think, and it's, you know, the funny thing, and people have made that point, and I kind of agree, those Netflix series should be shorter than what they are and tighter. Like, if it was like 10 episodes,
yeah,
that's like the perfect, like, people always complain, like, Game of Thrones isn't long enough. It's kind of like, they give you just enough, but you always want more, and it's kind of like, I always thought it was fine because, one, it's expensive as hell. Two, you don't want to water down stuff, even though so much stuff is going on. And with the Netflix one, it's like you reach where a point is like it starts to drag. And if it was like maybe 9 or 10 episodes, you wouldn't have those, you know, you wouldn't have those issues. And this one, I'm thinking it's going to have an issue where it's not going to drag because it's only 8 episodes. But it's like you got a lot of people on that show because it's like not just them, but the people that are in their shows. You know, like whoever's in the Daredevil universe, whoever's in Jessica Jones and Luke Cage and Iron Fist and the enemies that they're fighting, and then whatever new people you're adding. It's like you got a whole lot of people that you got to fit into in a short time frame. So every minute is going to be has to be utilized efficiently.
Yeah, especially because, and this is, you know, they show him in the preview, so it's no big deal. But well, actually, I didn't see Colleen in the preview at all.
But, I saw her.
Okay, all right, I just missed her then. But then Elektra's back, and if you see the trailer, hey, tough shit. This is all in the trailer, guys. You know, Claire's obviously in it. Foggy Nelson's going to be in it. Misty Knight. All like the, seemingly all the side characters are going to be back for this. So in 8 episodes, that is a lot to work in. And it's funny, from the comic books to the screen, how things have changed. Because it, we mentioned this last week about how there's no way Misty Knight would go for this version of Danny Rand. So Danny's got his girlfriend Colleen on. And then Luke Cage is going to be around with both Misty and Claire there. Knowing that in the comics, Danny and Claire, or Danny and Misty Knight are together, so it's like,
and Jessica Jones and Luke Cage.
Oh my god, funny, I totally forgot about that.
Yeah, like even though, and it's funny where that started on the show, but they split up by then. It's like, and meanwhile, all that, and you got Daredevil basically by himself because Karen is busy messing around with the Punisher, and Foggy is working with Jerry Hogarth. It's like you got a lot of, and that's not even taking account. Sigourney Weaver is the main villain of this. Yep. How amazing. And I've seen rumors of who she's playing, and I haven't talked about it because it's like, I want to be surprised. I know one of them came in is like, she may be playing like Mephisto.
Oh, see, IMDb has her as Alexandra.
Yes, so. I saw, and that's her name on there, but it like, they treat it like it's a, like she's, it's a cold word for her playing something else, and they playing coy.
That makes sense.
And I want to see it. And I want to see, because it's kind of like, I would have never thought that they would come like Sigourney Weaver is going to be like, it built up with her being the main villain of all this. And it's just a thing like, oh yeah, they got Sigourney Weaver, yada, 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 no big deal. And it's like, wow. Like, it's a lot of moving parts there. And one thing I noticed is how their fighting styles kind of like differ so much, where like Jessica Jones' thing is, she's not as durable as Luke Cage, but she's stronger. So, because somebody pointed out, like, you see the fight scene, and of course, they always had the corridor fight. Like, she's barely trying. Like, she just flicks her hand, and the dude flies, like, 10 feet. Like, Luke Cage winds up and hits the dude. She's looking at, like, you might kill this man. Daredevil walking around with a scarf around his head. And I like how she pointed out, like, how stupid that looks. Mm-hmm. And his joke is, well, where's your scarf?
Yeah.
And then, like, seeing how he fights and then seeing how Danny Rand fights. And it's kind of like, it's a weird, it's a volatile mix. And I'm curious to see how it plays on TV.
Yeah, I do like the fact that there's another, like, hallway scene. But this time it's all the characters doing it. So, and I'm sure they did that on purpose. So it was kind of cool to pull them all together. Which reminds me, I have to make sure she watches Daredevil season 2 before we get to Defenders, or it's not going to make any sense. It doesn't appear to doesn't. If you miss that one, that looks like to be the crux of it with Elektra coming back to life, and then Stick showing up. So, I know we were talking about it. I don't remember the exact wording, but. One, I remembered as we were talking about it, Stick is a dickhead, which seems to be a theme for some characters on the show today, but it was the Devil of Hell's Kitchen, or there's the Devil, the smart-ass detective, which I was trying to come up with a way to describe Jessica Jones, and I don't really know if she was a smart-ass, it's more so just... cynical.
Yeah, she was. She was cynical, but she was like this smart, because she always had something like slick to say, where it's kind of like you wanted to smack her in the mouth. Like, it's a funny thing where she always had something smart and snarky to say, and it's like it only slid because one, she was so powerful, and two, she was this same, she was a loser. Like, she, because she came off as like pathetic in like a lot of parts of the show, so I can think of a better description that didn't make her sound, you know, unlikable.
Yeah, I guess it. I don't know. It's
Like
I said, I couldn't come up with anything better. I mean, it was just odd how it came out, and then Luke Cage was next, and it was the ex-con with a heart of gold or something. Mm-hmm. And I was like, what? He was this. I mean, there was another part where it said the savior of Harlem, and I'm like, well, that actually sounds a little classier than the stereotypical ex-con with a heart of gold. Like, wait a second, that.
But and just then, remember who it's coming from, the dude with the glowing hand.
And like, that's why, as Stick. I was talking to you, that's why I was like, wait a minute, Stick's a dick. So, all right, he's doing it on purpose. All right.
Like, Stick has always been a dick that's tried to murder at least two of them. Like, he's tried to, like, murder Daredevil and definitely tried to murder Elektra and made no qualms about it. Like, he's an asshole, and he's at least he's consistent. So, it's just funny, like, seeing it built there and then wondering where it's going after that, because it's kind of like you have all these villains, but then it's like you still got the Kingpin around waiting, and you know the Punisher's a thing, but you don't know if he's necessarily going to be in this or not, because the way they filmed it, he may not be in there. It's like, yeah, what is it, like, when does it come out, like August?
Yeah, it's August 18th, the day before the wife's birthday. So
I will definitely Yeah, so I will definitely try to make my work schedule so I'm off that day and watch it. So especially knowing that it's kind of ahead, because it's like I'm looking forward to it, and the fact that it's 8 episodes will definitely help. And just to see, like, you know, that's what they've been building to. Like, you know, it's basically been built like when Daredevil season 1 was a success and they brought in Jessica Jones and Luke Cage. It's basically like you're building toward this thing. Like, Netflix has its own universe, and it culminated to this. And now you want to see, like, how it looks.
And it's funny because I know they've already started planning, you know, Daredevil Season 3, which they could be shooting right now. And then Punisher is shooting now, which he doesn't show up on the IMDb, so I'm guessing this is not his bag. But... but you're right. It is the culmination of everything, and I can't think of a better way to say this right now. But not that the movies ran into this problem, but they have to avoid the problem of splitting them all up again for the next, like, you know, series for each character. And so, wait a minute, you guys are all in the same city, so why the hell aren't you guys helping each other? Because, you know, there's Daredevil season 3. They said there is going to be a Jessica Jones season 2, Cage season 2. I don't know about Iron Fist, though. So, which, the way Iron Fist ended, they kind of have to make another one. Unless that's the next Defender season or something.
I mean, you can do stuff. It's kind of like, unless you want to have, if you want to combine Luke Cage and Iron Fist.
Heroes for Hire, that'd be fun.
Yeah, and then have them with, like, Misty and Colleen and everything like that. Like, you can do... It's funny where they can do whatever they want. And people want to watch... Like, people say all the one, like, I didn't watch this. I'm like, it's somebody that's watching it. Because it got to the point, like, Luke Cage, so many people watched it, like, Netflix shut down for, like, a couple hours. And for all the talk about Iron Fist, people watch that, too. Like, people definitely watch Jessica Jones. So it's something there for everybody. Like, you know, everybody may not be watching it, but enough people watching it for it to be viable. And just think about the fact Punisher shows up for, like, by the third episode, you hear the talk, like, he's going to have his own show because he's that awesome. And he has his own show. Like, just something like that. Like, that's the model they have, where if somebody's good enough and it makes sense, they can just have their own show.
Yeah, and, well, Colleen doesn't. Well, Colleen was a character in the comics, right? I'm just curious.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. Mm-hmm. She could, but...
Yeah, her and Misty Knight were like a team. Like,
that's
Daughters
right.
of the Dragon.
That's right.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, so, I don't know, man. It made me excited to see it. The exact opposite feeling I had for Iron Fist. So, that's a positive already. And I hope it delivers. Because I know, it selfishly, as a fan, I want these to go on forever. So... Just like the movies, but speaking of movies, go ahead.
So as long as they're being made well and make money, and it's funny, I've always wondered how they measure the success of stuff with Netflix, because they don't mention the numbers, but They keep making shows that work, because I know one thing, like, they keep paying Adam Sandler a lot of money because they say he has the most watched stuff on that network by far. And that always, at first that bothered my mom. I was like, not really, like, this Adam Sandler, people still, his fans still like him.
Yep.
It's a lot of people that kind of tuned out, was like, somebody's watching that stuff. Like, they're not giving him $40 or $60 million for nothing. And the fact that they, like, keep doing what you're doing, we're giving you more money, shows that whatever he's doing is working. Like, he doesn't have to make a movie in a movie theater anymore if he doesn't want to. It's kind of like,
yeah, which I don't think he wants to.
I doubt he wants to. It's like, he can probably make a couple hundred million dollars by the time he's done just doing Netflix stuff, which is mind boggling. Mm-hmm. But good for him. Good for him.
Yeah,
get that money.
And you don't. And it's the same thing. It's, I like Adam Sandler. Well, you don't have to watch it then. It's literally, yeah, that easy. Like, it's even easier now. Now you don't even have to leave your house to skip his movies.
It's perfect. Like, every time I go on Netflix, I see one of his movies, and I never watch any of them.
Nope.
And that's it. Like, I just, you know, I see the thing, I laugh, and I click on what I want to watch. It doesn't hurt my feelings one bit. Like, if somebody wants to watch them, it's the thing.
Yeah.
I will say this is kind of off topic. I know we were talking about the whole, when are we going to get Wonder Woman commercials? Boy, because I have seen, like, one day, I have seen her commercials. It doesn't matter what channel I've been watching. Like, I was watching Raw and I saw them. I was watching Gotham and I saw them. I turned and watched The Flash. I was watching, like, Love and Hip Hop. I saw them, like, every damn show that I've streamed or, like, had on my DVR, I've seen at least her commercial, like, two or three times.
Yep. Yeah, it was only a matter of time, and that doesn't come out until June. And I wonder if part of it's because Guardians of the Galaxy is out this week, and now it's like, well, time to free up some. Oh, Wonder Woman, all right, here, just slide on in the same slot.
But I know the thing is kind of like, and people tend to forget, is they were saying how they were comparing the, like, promos, like Guardians of the Galaxy and Spider-Man compared to Wonder Woman. It's like Wonder Woman slack, and it's like, on the internet, yeah, but I've try to remind people all the time, that's the minority. Like, most people are not jumping on YouTube or online to watch a trailer. Like, a lot of times the first time they see a trailer is when it comes on TV or when at the movie theater. And it was if I ever might have forgot it, it was reinforced when I went to the movies and they showed the Batman versus Superman trailer when we went to see whatever movie that was. I don't remember if it was Force Awakens or something like that. It might have been Force Awakens. And when Wonder Woman popped up, people were surprised and started clapping. And it was like, we had already seen it like a couple months ago, but for a lot of people, that's the first time they saw it. And I remember some smarky asshole was like, oh, I saw that 4 months ago. And I'm like, well, good for you. Most of these people have. And it's like, yeah, most of these people aren't going on YouTube to watch a trailer. So they usually start busting commercials like a month ahead. And I'm glad it's not late, like earlier, because I remember getting sick of Ghost in the Shell commercials by the time the movie came out, because I just saw it over and over again for like two. And it wasn't just the fact that the movie, even before knowing the movie was bad, it was like two and a half months, it seemed like. I just keep seeing over and over. And it's like, enough's enough at to a certain point.
And it didn't help that movie either. I know I mentioned Dark Tower, but this is actually a better segue. I just quickly, before we started the show, pulled up the top moneymakers in this country, and then, like, total gross in this country so far, okay?
Mm-hmm.
You know who number... You know, it's funny. is this accurate? Where is... Oh, there it is. Okay. So, number one is Beauty and the Beast by a near 2-to-1 margin over Logan.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
I knew that.
Well, I mean, I guess Logan's rated R, so that actually makes Logan's run even more impressive. The one that's going to come to absolutely no shock, that's not that it's in the top 10. Well, that it is in the top 10 because of the expectations for this movie. All right, the top 5 are Beauty and the Beast, Logan, Fate of the Furious, the Lego Batman movie,
mm-hmm.
and number 5 beating out Kong Island. Get Out.
Yeah.
Get Out.
Yeah.
Crazy. Because that cost, what, $2 to make? I mean, something basically ridiculous.
When you think about, like, how much money Get Out, and to a lower extent, like, Split, where both of those movies probably were made for less money than what Tom Hanks got for The Circle.
Yeah, it was made for $4.5 million.
Yeah, like every now and then you just have this movie that just captures, like, you know, it just captures, like, everyone talked about this movie, and it's been out, and it's like, it's been out. People still go to see it, like, yeah. And it's just,
oh, good, good.
I know, I was thinking about that because, like, we look at box office and stuff, and I tell people, like, things have changed, and people need to get with the program with that. And it's come up a lot of stuff. It was that whole, like, we need a white guy to make money in movies. And that was always nonsense. And last week should have shown that was nonsense, because the top three movies, like, in box office, it wasn't like a big box office. It was like Fate of the Furious, How to Be a Latin Lover, and the sequel to this Indian movie that I've never heard of.
Okay, I didn't know what the hell the Latin Lover movie was. It just came out, and then I saw that you went and saw it, and I was like, what? And then, yes, this other movie, to the conclusion, I ain't trying that one. The fact that it's the second movie, and it came in third place.
Yes.
What?
Bahubali 2. Yeah, and it was kind of like, it was released in 425 theaters.
And it made $1 million. No, that was, I'm sorry. Whoops.
And it made $12 million. Yeah. And like, it, in the circle that had, you know, John Boyega, Emma Watson, and Tom Hanks came in behind all of them. And it's kind of, and there was in far more, you know, far more theaters and spent far more. Like, I didn't see any commercials for The Latin Lover. I saw the trailer for it when we went to the movie theaters like a while ago. And then Darlene was like, we're going to see this. And I'm like, I looked at it, I was like, we are? Like, I'm looking at a lot. Because I'm like, it's kind of like she sees movies with me all the time. So yes, every now and then it's like a movie she wants to see, and I'll see whatever. But I'm like, I didn't think that was on her radar. I'm like, oh, I think it'd be cute. I'm glad you brought it up, because it's a quick story. It's a different movie experience seeing that movie, because that's the first time I went to a movie theater where it was like a predominantly like Latin audience. And it explains a lot about movies, about what people, because people all ask all the time, like, who likes certain movies or why these people go to movies. Like, it's different, because comedy that a certain type of fan might like scoff at, like turn their nose at, gets eaten up by different crowds. And I noticed that, like, Tyler Perry movies is kind of like that too. But this is the first one I went to, a Latin one, where, what was it, some trailer, like the Baywatch trailer came on, and people were laughing their ass off, like laughing like loud, holding their stomach. And I'm like, it's funny, but I'm like, it was kind of like funny, ha ha, he he. And they just have no, I'm like, yeah. So this is like the audience where people think about that, that they get to, and you never think about that. If you go to certain movies, you don't necessarily see that audience. And the best way to describe it is kind of like, it's an ethnic better version of an Adam Sandler movie, if that makes any sense.
I was looking at the cast, like, and I'm like, this is a pretty interesting cast that's got going on. It's all comedy people, so yeah, I can see, like, where you're going. Yeah,
and it's kind of like, I forgot his name, or something, Derbez. Like, I read he's a big star. Like, he had what was it, Batteries Not Included, and that was like a big deal last year. Like, yeah, I can see the appeal, because he's funny. Like, he's hilarious, like a slapstick way, but also a subtle way. And it's weird, because it was like almost a bilingual movie, where sometimes they speak in English and sometimes they speak in Spanish. And like, the type of movie, I'm like, we're watching a movie, and Darlene actually got mad. I laughed. Like, they had to break down the movie, like, when they're little kids, and the dad is driving home. And he drives like a gas truck, and he's dozing off, and he drives through their house, and they all duck out the way. So he drives through the house, and then he stops and says, oh, I didn't get the best part. He says, I'm okay. And as soon as he says, I'm okay, the truck blows up and kills him. And I just lost it. Like, I was laughing. Like, Darlene looked at me like, what type of monster you are? And I couldn't help it. It was just so funny, because they just played it, like, straight. And everybody's wrong. Like, an old man in a wheelchair gets hit by two taxis. Like, it's one of those type of movies. Like,
huh. All right. Maybe this movie was mismarketed.
Like, Yeah, like Sophia Loren is in there, and she's like this rich old woman and everything that's like, you know, looking for a sugar daddy, and him and Rob Lowe are fighting over, and she has prosthetic arms, and both her arms get pulled off.
Wait, do you mean Raquel Welch?
Oh, yeah. I don't know why I said Sophia Loren. Yeah, Raquel Welch.
Sophia Loren actually seems like it would make sense, to be honest, but...
Yeah, like Raquel Welch, like both her, and like seeing Rob Lowe and this other guy struggle to put prosthetic arms back on this lady, and she just looking at him.
Oh my God! Like, all right, I'm sorry. Yes. This has a terrible title then, because that sounds hilarious.
Title, yeah, I think the title threw people off, but they knew they were marketing it to a specific crowd. They knew exactly who they market to, and it's this thing that people say all the time: if you make movies for people and have the people that they like in them, people will go see the movies. And I don't know why I'm still surprised when I say, oh, the Fate of the Furious. I don't know why. Why are people still surprised these movies make money? It's like, it's people that they like, and they make fun movies. And it's kind of like you spend half the time seeing these people that don't look like you. So when you finally get a chance to see people who look like you, you're going to go see it. And when you know they're marketing it specifically towards, it's like the whole church movies, like The Shack. It's been out for like a month and a half. It's made good money. It's like, who's this for? It's like, they know exactly what it's for. They market toward, we're not trying to hit everybody, we're hitting this crowd. We're going to give this crowd exactly what they want. It's almost kind of like ECW. Like, I call a lot of these movies, like, we're going to market to the specific crowd, give them exactly what they want, and give them, and they're going to come see it. It's a reason why Tyler Perry has a 30-room house in Atlanta, because he did that. Like, he went from being homeless to being worth nine figures. That's not by accident. When people, and this is the reason why we talk about Adam Sandler, why Adam Sandler is as rich as he is, because he gives his fans exactly what they want, and he keeps it moving, and it works.
Yeah, I'm not going to back off that they mistitled that movie, because there are plenty of goofy movies that have a, I'm going to say goofy title. But, like, have you ever seen the movie Grandma's Boy?
No, I have. I don't think, okay. I have.
It's not a good movie, all right? It's choppy, it's edited weird, things jump around. But it's got some hilarious shit in there. But they called it Grandma's Boy, and it was by Adam Sandler without Adam Sandler, and it was like, all right.
I've heard of it, I didn't see it.
If that would have had a better, it's a pothead movie. So, if they would have had a different title, I think it would have been done better. But I think going with what you said, that's probably the perfect thing. But I'm just looking at the cast, like, all right, it says How to Be a Latin Lover, and it's got Salma Hayek, all right, Rob Lowe, Kristen Bell, Rob Corddry, and Rob Riggle. So it's like,
they're all like side characters. That's, yeah, the whole thing. Yeah, it's kind of like they're there to elevate the main stars, like Salma Hayek and the other guy. And I will say this, it's hilarious because, like, Salma Hayek's there playing the sister and everything, and her trying to be homely and wondering if she could still get a boyfriend because, you know, her first husband dies. Kind of like, I always laugh at that. Like, it's not, you know, from Dusk Till Dawn, Salma Hayek. It's still Salma Hayek. Like, she still looks the way she looks. And I always laugh when they have these nines pretending to be sixes. Like, come on now. Like, yeah. Who are you fooling?
Yeah, I looked up, I got quiet while you were talking, because I looked up Raquel Welch pictures. I was looking for a new one, but of course they're all old. But even now, she's looking pretty good. So the idea that she has two prosthetic arms just kills me.
I mean, like, she got one climbing a mountain, and she got one, I forgot, like, eating off or something like that, or something. Like, the movie's ridiculous, but it's a ridiculous, funny movie that's, you know, makes a good point. Like, it's like an Adam Sandler movie without Adam Sandler, but more like, you know, sweet. Like, it has a heart to it. And I was shocked that I was thinking, like, I'm just going to watch this. And by the end, I'm like, you know what? I didn't feel like I wasted my money. I actually enjoyed myself way more than I thought. And I think part of it was I didn't have any expectations. And the other part was, like, the movie did what it set out to do. And the crowd I went to see it with, like, it's something to be said about seeing a movie with the right atmosphere, with the right crowd, because they elevate the movie. It's like when people are having fun into it, it makes the experience better. That's one of the reasons people still go to movie theaters.
Yeah, and it's funny because I saw a midnight show of the original Scary Movie, you know, the Keenan Ivory Wayans one, And that crowd was jacked and laughing at everything. And I see it later, like later, a couple years later, without that crowd, I'm like, eh, some of this stuff doesn't really hold up. But I remember it being in that theater, I was laughing my ass off along with everybody else. And so just to, you know, add on to your point about seeing something with the right crowd, but yeah, I lost my thing about the top 10, but I was, I guess because Beauty and the Beast held literally no interest to me, I was surprised at how much money it made, and I shouldn't have been. But then, seeing the others, like, damn it, I'm trying to find it. Here we go.
Yeah, I got the list up too.
Yeah, Kong Island, I thought that would have made more money, because that movie was great.
I mean, it actually made, I think it ended up making more than Godzilla did. It's kind of like, that's, it's funny where that's
a shit ton overseas, that's for sure.
Yeah, and that's the main lesson that people have been noticing and people need to realize. It's kind of like, U.S. money is fine, but most money is overseas money. It's like, a lot of these movies, it's kind of like, you might, because look at Fate of the Furious, where it made less than the first one, it made less than Furious 7, but it hit over $1 billion in 3 weeks. It's like, because that was international. Like, it's made a crap load in China. Like, these movies like that, trend, like, it's a reason when Triple S has a sequel, it will be solely because of international, because it made 44 here, and it made, what, total, like, 3-something, 350.
What the hell is The Shack?
That's this Christian movie with Sam Worthington. When he's there, like, his son or daughter vanishes or dies, and he gets a letter to go see her, and it's like, God, Octavia Spencer, and stuff like that, and Kenny Chesney or something, like, or some guy, Tim McGraw, one of them. It's like, it's a Christian movie.
Okay. Yeah. That's, you know, like, well, wait a minute. Where is The Resurrection of Gavin Stone?
I don't think you can
scroll. Only a handful of people are going to get that one, I think. So
yeah, this is 2017, so I don't think that movie qualifies. It came out last year.
Oh, it's actually number 55.
Oh, here you go.
Yeah, it's, hey, it's a joke, and it's domestically, it's made $2.3 million.
It made more than Trainspotting did.
Yeah.
So how about that? But no, looking at the list is kind of like, it's very curious when you see, like, one, how much of a thing, like, people, I think people tend to like Logan, yeah, didn't make, but no, like, it was like the fourth highest R-rated movie, like, box office of all time. Like, that's a big damn deal. Like, it's funny where the only reason people kind of like not realize that is because they compare with Marvel movies, because like it made less than Doctor Strange. I'm like, one, the Marvel movies tend to do better than everybody else anyway, besides like the DC movies. And then two, R-rated makes a difference. Like, that makes a big difference. And, like, this was a great movie. It was a depressing, sad-ass movie. So the fact that, like, it's, you know, like, it's going to be, like, Fate of Furious is going to push it in. And then, like, you know, May is here. So the list is going to look a lot different by the time August hits. Because, really, it's only been maybe, like, the big movies are basically, like, the top three movies that's on that list. And the other ones are kind of, like, you know, mid-range movies.
Yeah, it was funny. While you were talking, I was looking through, and that movie Slate, that WWE was part of the producer for, that I got confused with Get Out, and I have not seen Slate. I haven't seen Get Out yet either, but that Slate movie's made $2 million, and it only cost $250 million. Or God, sorry, $250,000 to make. And it only was released in 565 theaters. It's funny, I guess, you know, WWE must have advertised it itself, but I didn't think that movie looked that bad, and I thought it looked actually rather interesting. But
yeah, it did too. The main thing I've heard is kind of like its formula, you know, it just looks like a regular superhero movie, which is, I think what happened is you can't do a regular movie anymore. Like, if you just do a normal, average movie, you're going to get punished. Like, look at, like, Life. Like, people always say, you know, everything sequels or reboots or remakes, we don't have something original. And that was basically original horror movie. They were like, oh, it's like Alien. I'm like, when's the last time you had a movie like Alien? Like, Alien came out in the late 70s. It's 2017. Like, you can't say we don't get original stuff and then poo-poo when original stuff comes out. I was like, well, why wouldn't somebody make, you know, Pirates of the Caribbean? I need to pay my house off.
Yeah.
I mean, if it's kind of like, it's a reason where that mid-movie is the thing that suffers the most, because either it's going to be like Blumhouse or like Tyler Perry, where I'm spending between $2 and like $12 million, or, you know, like the John Wicks, I spend 30 or 40, or it's going to be where I'm spending $120 to $200 million. It's like, because there's no point in spending 80 if you might make 60, or 80 if you make 100. It's like, either go big or don't go.
And that, well, I mean, WWE never goes big, so.
I mean, they have no need to.
Yeah, but also, I'm wondering, is this their most successful movie? Depending on, because, I mean, they have their name on it.
The Call is still there, the one with Halle Berry.
Yeah, which still to this day, I don't understand how that happened, but.
It's Halle Berry, and it's kind of like, and I mean.
No, I mean, how'd they get Halle Berry in one of their movies?
It was right when she wasn't like a big star anymore, but she's still like a name, so. They got her at the right time, where she went from her being Halle Berry, like movie star, to Halle Berry character actress, which is hilarious when you don't, because now it's kind of like, you know, she's in that whole thing where she's almost like Angela Bassett, and because she's old, I mean, she's not old, but it's like she's been around for a while, and like she's now where she is, like comfortable, and it's just funny thinking about that, like that she's 50. So, it's just funny because you remember for a long time, it was like Halle Berry was, how people talk about Beyonce now, they talked about Halle Berry like that for a long ass time. Like, even if people, like, I know people that were like racist that like Halle Berry. So that's,
what was that movie with her and Billy Bob?
And Monsters Ball.
Yeah, that's
like
it.
I can imagine. Yeah, I'm sure the Klan rented that movie out plenty of times. So, yeah, but it's kind of like they got her at the right time. And I remember this might be a nice movie. I remember going there and, like, it was a packed theater and people enjoyed that movie. So, yeah, I think that's still number one.
All right. I was looking at something. I had pictures of Misty Knight up for some reason. I don't know why, but.
Yeah, it came out 2013. The budget was $13 million. And it made almost $69 million.
That's crazy, huh? Yeah. I guess because WWE Studios has such a stink on it that if anything's successful, it's going to be a rarity. Even, you know, even with a middle of the road Halle Berry, whatever, it's still like, oh, it made money, huh? All right, well, I'm not going to see it because it's got that stink of the WWE name on it.
And it was an R-rated movie too.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that.
Made that, yeah. And I remember it was, like, hilarious seeing Halle Berry do commercials for her movie on Raw. And it's like, wow, that's Halle Berry, like, hype. Because I remember they were hyping the movie, like, because Otunga was in it. And they kept making a big deal, like, you know, he's in the movie. They show clips from him and everything. And, like, Halle Berry, like, she didn't show up, like, on the show, but she showed up on a commercial during the show. Yeah. And it's funny what movies work. And we talk about all the time, like, sometimes it doesn't matter, like, timing. Like, I think about The Shallows. I'm still amazed that movie made as much money as it made, considering it's just, like, because Blake Lively ain't a movie star. Like, she's a TV star, and she's known, but it's like, she's blonde was the whole thing. And her fighting a shark, you wouldn't think would be, like, okay, that's something you would think you see on, like, you know, stars, like a made-for-TV movie or like a Netflix movie. And that movie had a budget of $17 million and made $120 million. And I love the movie. Like, I have it on Blu-ray. I actually have it on 4K, matter of fact. Like, it's a gorgeous-looking movie, but I'm still amazed. Like, how is that movie such a success, yet Dread just bombed?
Yeah.
Like, and it's kind of like timing. Like, and I remember Lexi Alexander made a big point saying, if you're not marketed the right way and you come out the wrong time, it makes no difference how good your movie is. If no one knows about it, no one sees it, it's going to down a rival. And I think that was the thing with Dread, where they didn't market it right. And they brought it out the wrong time. And it's just, And it's funny, like, that movie did what it did, and then a couple months later, John Wick made what it made. Like, yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Mentioning Dredd always, now it doesn't fill me with Dredd, but it just, it's a downer, because yeah. I was one of those that didn't go see it, but I bought the Blu-ray sight unseen, because I heard how good it was.
Yeah.
And it's just awesome. And just knowing we aren't getting a sequel to that. There's no chance in hell we're getting another one.
I mean, people have talked about it for the longest, but it's kind of like, I don't want to say never say never, but at this point, like, yeah, I doubt it. But it's kind of like timing makes an issue, because one of the things why the power, like, I'm looking at that list, and it's kind of like most of those movies came out around the right time. The one that probably suffered was Power Rangers.
Yeah.
That's what came out like later. If that movie had came out in like
August
would have been perfect. It would have did a lot.
Could have used that Suicide Squad slot.
Yeah, it's kind of like it's almost now where it's a year long thing where it's a strategy to kind of get in where you fit in. Like, unless you're a big name movie where you just come in wherever you want and everyone dictates, they move around you. It's like you gotta get your spot where. I looked at, like, you know, Beauty and the Beast was, like, number one for, I think, 2 weeks. And then, like, Boss Baby was number one for 2 weeks. Logan was number one for a couple weeks. And Fate of Furious was number one for 3 weeks. Once Guardians of the Galaxy comes out, I think at most there'll be 2 weeks. It's not going to be a lot of movies that's going to be number one for 2 weeks for a while.
Yeah.
They might get lucky if they won, because it's, like, almost every week is going to be something big out, like, big, big. And it's kind of like now where, like, you got to get your money that first week unless you're that movie that has real long legs, because otherwise, if you don't hit it the first week, you're going to be in trouble.
Yeah. I don't know if I feel like bringing this up, but...
Might as well. It's show 100.
Well,
so bring it
up. Have you seen this thing about apparently one of Southern Florida football players... He got arrested Monday with sexual battery and false imprisonment. And today, you know, he was in court, and the judge called out Charlie Strong.
I did hear about that.
And questioned whether he should be... And I haven't really given this a lot of thought, so this is all off the cuff. My first thing is, you can't tell a judge to shut the fuck up, but I would have told that judge to shut the fuck up. I've been on this job for 3 months. These aren't my players I recruited, but I'm also responsible for them, I understand. I can't control how many guys are on a football team in college? 80-something? 90? Something like that?
Yeah.
And two guys get in trouble, and you have the audacity to say that I can't control my players? I do my best. And,
yeah. And not only that.
It's I like Charlie Strong, by the way. So
yeah, and not only that, it's Charlie Strong has a rep. Like, I remember him because I live in Texas, and he was coach of Texas. He came in a reputation as, you know, he kicked off a lot of the troublemakers.
I think
when he
13
first got
guys like his first season.
Yeah, like his whole thing is, you know, culture of accountability. Like, I'm even if I lose, I'm not gonna have assholes on my team. Like, we gonna run a tight ship here, and like he's known, like that Charlie Strong nickname thing came from that. So the fact that one him of all people getting that question is batshit crazy. But it's like it's one like the same thing you said. Like he just got here; these aren't his players, and God, not like he's not their dad. But it's a part in there that's like people don't want to say like that. People love testing black people in authority. Like,
well, this judge is an alum, by the way.
So. I would bet you every dollar I had that Nick Saban would never get, like, no coach, no judge would be batshit crazy enough to ask Nick Saban something like that. Because Nick Saban would probably look at him for 15 seconds and then shoot him a week from now when he could get away with it. Like, this whole thing is like, I'm going to test you, what you doing, boy. Nonsense.
Yeah,
well, and it's like,
this chick, all right, so her exact words. This court, and I'm sure I'm not alone, questions whether you have control over your players. It's fairly clear that you do not have control of them off the field. And I guess only time will tell whether you have control over them on the field. I would implore you to think long and hard about whether being head coach at USF is a good fit for you before any other members of this community have to suffer at the hands of one of your players.
Yeah, I'm looking at her. I'm looking at the face, and I'm like, this is right out of like a civil rights movie. Like, what? But I'm like, I would hope you find in your heart to go fuck yourself.
Yeah.
would be my reply. Who the hell are you to come talk to me like this in this matter about this situation? Like, no. Go somewhere with yourself. I'm just looking at her now, and I'm just reading that, and it's that whole alumni and that whole arrogance. That's the thing that turns me off. I don't want to get on a rant about college sports, but that's one of the things that turns me off so much about college sports. That whole, you graduate and you feel like I'm part of the school forever, and I got to make sure the school, they don't need you. You're not Phil Knight representing Oregon. Beat it. They got their money's worth out of you. They do not need you anymore. So you do not have to defend the hollow grounds of University of South Florida. Go fuck yourself, lady. I'm reading this. I graduated from USF in 1989, and I was never ashamed of being a alum until now. I'm embarrassed and ashamed. Let's just say my USF diploma is not proudly hanging in my office right now. That's on you.
Yeah.
If that's all it took for you to be ashamed and embarrassed, then that degree didn't mean jack shit. Seriously, get off your damn high horse before it has a stroke.
Well, it's also, can't you also take the position that, yeah, I'm an alum that didn't do shitty things like this? If you want to have this attitude of superiority and you want to look down on these guys, it's like, listen, I don't know anything about this story other than this. And, sexual battery and false imprisonment, that sounds pretty horrible. And he got caught and he's actually got arrested for it. So good. Hey, Tuts, why don't you go out to Texas and talk to the Baylor coaches out there? Oh, no, wait, I'm sorry. They're all gone except for, they're at other college jobs now. So, I'm going to say this, but I just bear with me, what I mean. The system's working in this case. I'm not going to say it's going to work all the way through. Over at Baylor or at other universities, this stuff got swept under the rug repeatedly. Here you have Charlie Strong, who is in this job since, late December, January. And I don't think we should use that excuse fully.
I mean, no.
But it is reasonable.
It's the facts. Just got here. I didn't recruit these players. I can only do so much in a short time frame. And we're dealing with, teen, and the whole season. We're dealing with kids. They messed up. They got in trouble. They need to serve their punishment.
Yep.
But it's this whole accountability thing, they need to do something. It's like you marrying somebody that has stepkids, and then they rob a bank and they blame you, talking about you should have been a better father. I just married the broad a month ago. What are you talking about? I just got here and I just put my socks in the sock closet. Yeah. And now you're talking about, Bobby knocked off a 7-Eleven. What are you doing?
But in this case also, I think this gets lost in some cases, and I definitely know this isn't the case at every school, but a lot of these coaches are like father figures for these kids. They try to be, I should say. So that when one of these kids messes up, you think the good ones, the good coaches, do take it personal, and you don't want to just write them off. I mean, why else was he here? I'm going to say he's supporting him, not because of he thinks he's innocent, not that he's saying he's innocent, but he's there to support this kid. And instead of the focus on that, it's like, well, you messed up, son, and I'm here for you, but you have to know you messed up. I'm gonna help you out in any way I can. And instead of, because as you pulled up Nick Saban, we'll just use him because he was in the news this week. You think he's going to do that for any of these guys?
Hell no.
No, they're going to try and sweep it under the rug. And if it doesn't get swept under the rug, he's like, well, I'll suspend him for the game against Troy. And then, he's on his own after that. And then if it goes, it's like, oh, my God. But here you have Charlie Strong – showing what, like, I mean, maybe I'm just, maybe I should have given this more thought, but it's showing you what, like, a father should be like. Hey, you fucked up. You fucked up bad in this case. I'm going to be here as, like, a support. I'm going to tell you, you know, I don't like what you did. You got to do this. And instead, you got this bitch squawking at him. Well, I don't know if you should be the coach. Oh, you mean the guy that's standing up with his players? Like, and again, not you know, supporting the behavior, obviously, but supporting the player in that, you know, I don't know what's going to happen to this kid now.
And yeah, it's that whole, it just comes that whole, you know, parochial attitude that certain people had towards certain other people. Like, I don't feel like you know what you're doing in your job, and you're not in a position to do things the right way, and I'm here to scold you. And guys, like, don't be scolding grown-ups. And that's how it comes off. It's like, you've seen this late,
goddamn,
like,
job.
Yeah, like, it's almost like this whole, you don't know what you're doing, I gotta guide you and set you straight the right way, and you're making me look bad. Like, bitch, focus on yourself. Like,
I
seriously,
know, like,
like,
we're using, like, I know, like, the language, I mean, sorry, we're using, whatever, yeah. But anger brings out those things. So,
yeah, like, just reading that, like, I had heard the story, and I was kind of, like, a little annoyed, but I didn't go into details. But clicking and reading about it just pissed me the right, because it's like, stuff like this still happens. Like, this is stuff where you normally see, like, a Denzel Washington movie, where it's like, you got to overcome this to save the day, like, if it was, like, the 50s and 60s. And it's 2017, and people still acting like this. And then people wonder why. Well, why are you, man? Like, she is not Charlie Strong's dad. And Charlie Strong is not, you know, is not the trash man of her house. And this whole, you brought embarrassment to my school, and yeah, I'm ashamed to have my degree. One person, a couple people do something, and like, what? Like, seriously? Now you're gonna bring your degree down? Like, it's not like she went to Penn State and that stuff happened there. It's like, oh yeah, I was there when Joe Paterno and Sandusky was doing that stuff. And even then, it's like, I didn't do it. So I went to school to learn. I learned. It's not like it's Baylor. And I'm glad you brought that. Like, yeah. If it was Baylor, I'd be like, yeah. What school you went to? Oh, somewhere in Texas. Like, I wouldn't want to be bragging that right now. Where basically, it looks like it's rape you. And everybody's kind of like sweeping stuff under the rug, and like, that's, now that part's horrible. This is kind of like, she's just grandstanding, and she needs to get over her brace itself.
It's a clear response to that stuff. You know, Penn State, Baylor, I don't want to get into all these schools, but the two big, like, ones obviously are Penn State and Baylor.
Like, and people forget about Baylor, like, even before the whole rape stuff, they had the murder stuff that went on,
that
where the guy
gotten,
got shot by the,
yeah.
Yeah, like, the guy got shot by a teammate, and they swept on the rug and tried to make it like, oh, he was a drug dealer. It was a drug deal gone wrong.
The
like,
coach was implicit in that.
Yes.
And he's coaching somewhere else now.
Yes.
Like, how does this work? And I don't believe that players don't get paid. You're getting that free-ass education. And it doesn't, obviously, balance
well,
out
guess
what your
what?
Coach is given.
Guess what? If you got to play to get it, it ain't free, as I always say. So, yeah. But I know the whole thing is kind of like, no, I know where you get to. I just want to jump at saying, like, I know it's kind of like that education, it costs what it costs. And it's kind of like, a lot of people won't have sympathy where people go in debt and spend 50, 60 grand on student loans, and you get it for playing sports. But it's kind of like, you still got to play the sport, and the sport comes first. It's like, they don't care if you get the education or not. They like, I want you, if your grades are suffering for you to make that block, then boy, you're gonna make that block. And it's kind of like, lose weight, because one is like, you can go on academic scholarship and still get paid, and two, Nick Saban has got a raise. He's gonna make $11 million this year.
Yeah,
like, they have linebacker coaches that are almost millionaires in Alabama. So
yeah, 950,000.
So when you hear, yeah, so when you hear stuff like that, or people talking about, oh, we got a brand new locker that's bulletproof and has his own air conditioning, but you can't pay the players, because it's like, it would ruin the sanctity of the student athlete. It's like, you need to go somewhere with all that. Like, that shit sound nonsense. Yep. Where everybody getting money except for the players that's actually doing it. And then the whole excuse is, well, they gotta be students. Well, why don't you just be a regular teacher then? Like, would you still be doing your job and love your school if you were making like $80,000 a year? You think Nick Saban would be in Alabama if he's making like, say, $150,000 a year, which is still a shitload amount of money? Hell no.
So yeah, go somewhere. Also, like, they go somewhere about that. Who is the Ohio State player that said, why don't they just let us major in football?
Cardale Hayes.
I don't know if I disagree with that.
Cardale Jones.
Cardale Jones. Like, I don't know if I really disagree with that, because that's why you're going to school. And, all right, look, most of the guys on that team are not making the NFL. And there are the guys that go there that are like, yeah, I'm going to make the NFL. You know who they are for the most part. And even if it's not, you know, as a starter, whatever, you're still, that's what you're going to do. Well, why not let them? And then minor in something else. And I know that this will make people like, what are you talking about? Well, okay, look at the guys who leave school early. Look at the guys who do general studies or undeclared still by the time they come up on their fourth year. Those are the guys that are going to the pros. And I'm not saying all of these people are, which I think is ridiculous to even have to say something like that, but...
Yeah, like, it's maybe 5-10%. Yeah, it's this whole thing. People, like, the argument against paying them breaks down as soon as you use any research toward it, because it's like, it might be, what, 5% that make it, but those 100% lead to these schools making crap load of money, which helps everybody else.
Yep.
And people like to bring up the whole thing, like, it should be about education. I have never heard anybody say, what college did Evgeny Malkin went to, or worry about Sidney Crosby's education. I've never heard anybody ask about Mike Trott. Like, can he function as a human being because he didn't get his college degree? That's never come
well,
up.
Shit, you think people give a damn? Most of the baseball guys.
Yeah. You think people give a damn about Ollie Raisman, what she's going to major in? Like, no. That only comes up. It's amazing, and I always bring it up. People never care about the education of young poor people that's predominantly black in these money-making schools when they're in grade school or high school, and they come to these shitty ass schools with no funding, and now all of a sudden they plopped in college where they may not have the skills to even like compete because they were starting like, you know, they was starting backwards from Jump Street, and now all of a sudden you want to care about the education now? Like, you didn't care about it the whole time they were alive. You're not going to care about it once they're done, but now it's this whole thing they need to get the degree and lean on something. Like, really? Like, no, it's kind of like, I don't want to get paid because I'm jealous and because I don't make money. Like, I'm a poor college student. They get to be a poor college student, too. And why don't they get a job? You know, they can't. Like, no one cares about the guy that's in the engineer major unless he invents something. Like, people, Duke became a thing because of Coach K. And Coach K became a thing because his basketball team became good. His basketball team became good because of the players. Like, let's cut this crap out. Like, these schools are bringing in shitloads of money because of either a great football program or a great basketball program or both. Everybody can't beat Harvard or Yale where they just have these CEOs that's just throwing money back to them. Like, most of these schools are making their money because of the sports teams.
Yep.
And it's helping everybody. But
predominantly football.
Yeah, and you hear these, like, some of these players are getting money on the table. You hear a lot of them talking about, yeah, I had to split a pack of oodles and noodles to get by a couple days a week. There's no reason for them to, like, people will not brag about being broke. Like, that's not a thing. I know that might be a hipster thing. That is not, like, I was in college and I was broke. I did not brag about it, but I was. It was like, yeah, what did you eat? Student lunch and a pack of chips. Like, I used to have to ration out, like, you know what? I'm going to spend $1 a day. I got 50 cents for video games and 50 cents for snacks. I got real good at the video games, so I had to make those two quarters last. Like, and I was not an athlete.
Holy shit,
like,
young man. You're paying with quarters?
Yes. Back when you still going to arcade, like, yes, I had a game quarter. Like, I got real good at Samurai Showdown 2 and Street Fighter Champion Edition, because that quarter was going to last, because it was kind of like, so yeah, like, I don't want to hear this whole, if you can't pay him, and I'm like, no, not when these coaches have horse farms. Or like, Nick Saban not only gets all that money, they pay for his house.
Yeah. Yes. Oh, I think the University of South Carolina does the same for
Mitch, a lot of these schools do that.
I don't understand that.
The more money you make, the less you got to pay for. Like, it's a beautiful thing where they reward money with more money. You would think somebody that's making $11 million could afford the mortgage on his house, but I guess...
Why would you have a mortgage on your house? You're making $7 million a year. Say the government takes 50%. I guess he's got to give, 3% to his agent. You buy a $1 million house. Shouldn't he be paying cash money for that thing?
Yes, like I'm sure he doesn't have to worry about the roof fund for his house. Like, it's, it's obscene, and over again you hear about people bragging about how much the coaches make, and they get a brand new stadium, and they got a brand new facility, and these players around like, what about me? Like, I can't even sell a T-shirt with my name on, I'm gonna get in trouble. Like, no, that's why this.
Well, we gotta wrap this up, but two things. One, I'm a Michigan fan. And for the longest time, Desmond Howard, you know, the famous Heisman he did in the end zone.
Yeah.
He didn't make any money off that, even after college. Because the NCAA had control over it. They sold that image, or either they sold that image to somebody, or somebody actually owned, with the air quotes on it. He actually had to take that guy to court. So that he could, because that guy would keep selling it. Newspapers, I almost said photos, duh. Like plaques, posters, all that stuff. He's making all this money off of Desmond Howard, who did everything. That guy just happened to be lucky and get a shot of it. And there was no NCAA support. The University of Michigan couldn't help him out because they're under the NCAA rules of it. And then on top of that, I don't know how closely you follow college football, but Michigan, like Jim Harbaugh took the Michigan football team over to Rome to practice. And I guess you're allowed to do this once every 3 years or something like that. And there were people that were going crazy. Like, why are you taking the students over there? You know, this is a recruiting advantage, which is hilarious. And it's like, well, wait a minute. Most of these kids, and what a lot of these kids have even said is, I never would have gotten this opportunity. So they go over, and people are still bitching because they're given this trip to Rome where they had to practice for, I think, 90 minutes a day. something ridiculous like that. And it's like, what do you care? One, the university didn't pay for it. An anonymous donor paid for it, which I'm guessing is probably, was it Jeff Ross that owns the Dolphins?
Stephen Ross.
Yeah, he owns the Dolphins. So he's been a real big benefactor for Michigan. But it's like, these kids don't get that opportunity. But yet... they get to go on this, like, well, how is that not a violation? It's like, oh my God, why do you care?
Like, they don't
leave them alone.
Yeah, like, it's this whole, if I'm miserable, I want you to be miserable too, even if you bring me enjoyment. Like, you have no problem going, cheering these people on, and them bring you happiness while you're in school and while you graduated the school, and you have any problem, like, if you can buy the jersey of these players and you know this is the player's jersey number, anything like that, and you enjoy it and you go watch them, and you have no problem with, like, these coaches making obscene money, then you can't be this whole, oh, it's fine, but I don't want them to get paid. Mm-hmm. What? Like, this whole, I've never been, like, that's why I'm unpaid internships. That's a damn scam. I've never done one. I'm glad I never done one. I'm like, you kiss my ass. Like, I know plenty of, they used to have a different term for unpaid internship back in the day. The people who look like me. So, yeah, you want me to do something for nothing? And at least in this case, they say it's for the experience. I'm like, pay me. Like, if you were paying a person to do it beforehand, then pay me or get somebody else. I ain't the sucker because I got bills, and I got this whole you doing it for pride and you got to earn your keep, and like, you do something and you get paid for it. That's how jobs work. Like you do, like you get a service, you do, you provide a service and you get something back. Not you provide a service and what you get back is the experience and everything like that. I'm like, I want experience, so I go to amusement park and I got to pay for that. Like I'll go walk around the park and get the experience of that. If I'm doing something that's leading towards your company or you making money or getting something, you got to pay me. You got to give me something. Like go somewhere, this whole do the kind of art. Because guess what? You ain't doing it for free. All these coaches who say, because I hear these coaches all the time, and we can wrap it up. I hear these coaches all the time saying, I don't think these players can get paid or it's going to ruin the experience. And they're all millionaires. I'm like, why don't you do, if you love college so much and you're doing it for the idea of it, why don't you do it for free? Do it for room and board. How about that? You get to live on campus and they'll pay for your food and pay for your family to eat and everything like that. And see how much you like that. I bet you you do that for like a week and you change your tune real fast. Like you can't be somebody that's making $5 million a year talking about these players, they need to, they'll be okay. Like you kiss my ass. You'd be okay with that.
We got to wrap, but it just, especially when it's mostly for the SEC because, you know, that don't give a shit about their players. And you hear them making the most noise about when other schools do stuff that they don't. As in, treat the players well. So,
yeah.
Anyways, yeah. So there, we went off on a tangent we were not prepared for. So, which we may change our minds later. I don't know. Anyways, thanks for listening. We are off next week.
Yes, we are.
True to my word, I'm leaving this Trump-forsaken country. So, I think that works. I don't know. Anyways, I am going on vacation to where I don't carry my phone anywhere with me. So, well, that's not true. I'll probably take pictures. But, yes. So, I don't know. We'll get at you in 2 weeks for Audio 101 on the way to 104, the big one. And I'm Jeremy, Stunt Granny, all social media stuff. Thanks, guys. Talk to you in 2 weeks.
For Jeremy Mays, I'm Shahida Dohadi, and welcome and enjoy the ride to show 100, the first of many hundreds. We are out.